Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Smiley Kaufman for 61. Wow.
I'm Smiley Kaufman, and this is The Smiley Show.
All right, guys, we got another episode here on The Smiley Show, and we have Akshay Bhatia joining us, and the first guy to come on the Smiley Fridays happy hour and win. So Akshay, it's like you're the first guy to get it done. Took down Rory and a bunch of other guys on the weekend. I know that had to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, that was probably one of the craziest finishes ever in golf. Honestly, I mean, 7-shot lead with 9 holes to go. You're feeling pretty good, and you know, Denny obviously just went blackout. So it was a wild finish, but yeah, I mean, being on the happy hour and getting that done is pretty cool, because I feel like a lot of guys would, you know, try and minimize as much distractions as possible, but I guess I like it. So.
Yeah. I mean, you did a really good job of, first off, you know, you were basically a wire to wire champion in that. And you had like a big shot lead after every single round. And when I talked to you on the happy hour and just asking about how are you sleeping, are you thinking about it too much? And I didn't really get a sense at all that you were going anywhere that week. It seemed like you were in a really good mental space and that you had a lot of trust in your game and that somebody was going to have to go run you down. And that's kind of what happened, because you didn't play bad on Sunday by any means.
Yeah, I mean, you shoot 5 under, you get to 20 under on that golf course, you feel pretty good. But yeah, it was just one of those weeks where I felt like, you know, leading up to it, I played great in Houston and learned a lot. Just why I didn't win the golf tournament. And, you know, even throughout the whole week, I just remember some points I had a 2-shot lead by making a bogey and the other guys would make a birdie. And I just always felt like when I had the opportunity to make a birdie or put myself in a good position, I was capitalizing a lot that week. And yeah, it was just, it was a crazy week, because that was, you know, one of those weeks where mentally I was, you know, working on so many things, but had just a big goal and everything happened so fast achieving that goal. And yeah, then flying straight to Augusta is a pretty cool feeling as well.
Heck yeah. And you know, it's very rare for me, because I go up and down the range talking to guys. And I will say that the two guys I talked to the most on Wednesday were you and Denny. It was just like really odd that I had like the two guys that were competing down the stretch. So I had all this information. I just felt and sensed, like you talked about the week before in Houston, how you felt like, man, if I just would have, you know, done these a couple things, I would have been right there and had a chance to win. So referring to that, you know, when I did see you on Wednesday, I think you showed me this pretty long list of things that you were working on mentally, just goals that you were setting. And I just want you to kind of talk a little bit about the mental space that you were in that week, and then all the mental things you've been working on in the weeks leading up to San Antonio.
Yeah, I started working with Ryan Davis, and you know, there's more than just the golf stuff that I've been working on, but more life stuff. And I don't think a lot of people realize, you know, what it takes to be a professional golfer, especially at a high level. You're not just a golfer, you're a CEO of a business. And, you know, adding a lot of people to my team and having people that have been there, you know, since day one, is, it's a big deal to be 22 and kind of run the show. So, yeah, I just, you know, started talking to him during players, and I think everyone knows Julie Ellion, who has helped Wyndham and JT and, you know, Max, and just kind of shows how important it is to be strong, you know, every week, because 1 week can change your life. And, yeah, that week, you know, I had a sense of calmness, but throughout the whole week, I was very stressed out. And I think changing the dialogue is important. You know, sometimes I'll be like, oh, I feel very anxious, but more so being on the PGA Tour and playing tour events is stressful. And, just changing certain dialogues. And, you know, we had a goal of where I wanted my world ranking to be, by the US Open. And start of the year, I wrote down, I wanted to play all four majors, and we kind of knew that Augusta was such a long shot, but at least trying to get into, the US Open, I was in PGA, and then the British Open was an important goal for me. And I wrote down on my wrist 35 the whole week. That was kind of the world ranking I wanted to get to by the US Open cutoff. And, you know, anytime I saw it, whether it was in a porta potty or my tee time the final day was, I think, 11:35. Ryan played golf, and his golf cart, the first golf cart he saw was 35. So, like, just reminding myself of that. And I think the craziest thing is, you know, I obviously won. My world ranking went from, you know, low 80s to 34. And then at Augusta, I finished 35th. So the
wow.
Just kind of the, you know, how strong your mind is of manifesting certain things like that is crazy to me, because, you know, that was such a big goal and it all happened so fast. And then I finished 35, kind of the end of the story or end of the chapter at Augusta, and finished 35th. It was just so crazy. But I feel like, you know, I've grown a lot as a person in the last 4, 5, 6 weeks, 7 weeks. And, you know, it's nice to be in the position I am now, because there's so many things that I still want to accomplish, but just kind of getting through this first half of the year and having a wind is really hard, but it was, you know, well worth the wait.
Yeah. And can you take me a little bit through this back nine? Obviously I was in the booth that week, so I had a chance to really be a part of the action, but the 10th hole, three putt, and then you make that birdie on 11, which I felt like, all right, this thing is over. In your mind, after you made that putt on 11, I believe Denny made, I can't remember if he made a bogey or if maybe made a par, but it just, to me in my head, is like, okay, this thing's over. Did you feel that way heading into the 12th hole?
You know, I felt like, you know, Denny made a 15, 20 footer off the green on 10. And I think in my mind, I felt like I needed to kind of force the issue a little bit. And I hit it, you know, 4 or 5 feet by, and then end up missing that. And I'm like, wow, that just went from a 7-shot lead to like a 5-shot lead so quick, or 4-shot lead or whatever. And then I saw him hit his putt 5, 6 feet by on 11. I make mine and I'm like, all right, you know, 5 or 6 up with 7 to go. I think, you know, we're doing good. And then all of a sudden he makes a, you know, 35 footer on 12. And this putt was going so slow, like so slow. It was one of the fastest putts I've ever seen. And I'm like, oh my God, it's 7 feet short. It goes in. And, you know, 12, then we had a probably 20, 30 minute wait. It's 240 yards into the wind. Pretty tough hole. Not a lot of, you know, places to miss it. The greens are pretty firm at this point. He hits a 4-iron, 5 feet. And I'm like, dang.
It was so good. It was so good.
And then I think I striped a 4-iron right at it, and it landed a little soft, and I had 30 feet. It was a great shot. And then, you know, then we get to 13. I hit a perfect drive. He kind of hits it left, hits in a good spot. And then I, you know, I miss it in that right bunker, which is a pretty easy up and down. And I felt like my bunker game that week was amazing. My short game was great that week.
It was so good.
Yeah. And then, you know, he hits his pitch to 10, 15 feet and I hit it to a knock in. And then he makes that. And I'm like, all right, well,
he just ain't going away. He just ain't going away.
And my goal for the day was my goal for the week was 4 under a day. If I could shoot 1600 for the tournament, I felt like, you know, I had a chance. And I was 4 under at that point. I was like, I'm doing, you know, everything I'm trying to do in this round. And then finally, you know, he misses a green. on the next hole. And then I, you know, unfortunately missed the green. And then he chips in, and I'm like, dude, what is going on? You know, and I'm just like, this guy.
You just have to laugh at that point, right?
I mean, no, I was just like, oh my gosh, this is really happening. And, you know, then I have a 3-shot lead with 3 to go. 16, he hits a great shot. I think that's the hardest pin. Mm-hmm. You know, on that green, there's just nowhere to miss it. And, you know, he hits it a great shot. And then I kind of feel like I had to force the error again. Didn't hit a great shot. And I think that up and down is huge for me.
Huge.
Because I feel like if I don't get that up and down and he makes that, then that momentum is, you know, so much different going into 17. And, yeah, then he makes that. And I'm like, all right, we got a freaking ball game here. But I felt like if I birdie 17, you know, I feel like I probably lock it up. And 17, I hit, you know, a not great drive, but I hit a great bunker shot there. And Denny hit a great pitch there. And then I hit a good putt, just not enough speed. And I think kind of with the nerves and feeling like I had this whole big lead and now it's gone. And it's just kind of deflating, but also like, all right, well, you know, I'm still in it. But I think getting into 18 and the fact that I needed to make the putt to force a playoff was ridiculous, you know, and it was crazy, but it was like, I don't know, just the best feeling doing that, because it was such a similar situation to Barracuda when I won last year. You know, I had to make a putt in regulation, and both the putts were so similar. Both, you know, I do aim points, so they're both 1% downhill, left to right, and both of them went in dead center. And even in the playoff, you know, Patrick Rogers hit in a divot and he fatted it short of the green. And then obviously Denny fatted it short in the water. And it was just so similar. But yeah, that back nine is crazy because I felt like I was doing everything pretty much perfect or right. And, you know, he just got really hot, and it was unbelievable to watch, because that guy, just nothing fazed him until obviously the playoff kind of ended not great for him, but. Yeah,
right.
Unbelievable.
And Akshay, any professional golfer, you know, the satisfaction that you get from holing a putt on the 18th green when you have to have it, I mean, that's what you train for. So when you saw Denny make that putt on the 18th green and you said, okay, I have to make now, what was going through your mind? Was there a sense of calmness, or was there a sense of, oh crap? Like, what, take me through exactly how you felt when that ball went in the hole.
Well, I remember doing the press conference and they were kind of asking me like, what did you think over that putt? And vocally, I'll talk to myself, and I just kind of told myself like, let's freaking go. And right before I hit that putt, and, you know, heart was pounding, hands were shaking. And, I don't know, when I made that putt, it was just like, it kind of felt like, in a way, I felt like I took the wind out of his sails. Just because he played so incredible, but yeah, I never gave up, and I never backed down. And in that moment, I feel like I've been able to perform so well under that pressure. And, there's just no better feeling, because you dream about, you know, holding those putts, and whether it's a, you know, signature event, a major, whatever it is, it's just that feeling of like, you have the biggest balls ever, you know.
But that's what you gotta have on the PGA Tour, man. You gotta have that.
Yeah. And it's just no better feeling. It's just the satisfaction of like, I don't know, just the will that you have to execute in that situation is something like no other.
Do you think that in the let's freaking go moment and the fist pump happens, do you wish you would have dialed it back just a smidge on the pump fit, or the fist pump? Because is it true that on the fist pump, shoulder came out a little bit?
Yeah, it's subluxed, so it kind of slipped out, slipped back in, and, you know, then my caddy pounded my hand, and I was like, dude, you know, from now on, I guess I'll tip my cap, but
no, you got to keep doing that.
I remember, you know, shuttling back to the tee, and I was just like, you know, I told my fiance, I was like, this is, you know, my shoulder came out. This doesn't feel great. I get to that team. My shoulder feels super loose. Obviously, all the ligaments are stretched, and I didn't really know what to expect off that in tee shot, if it was going to kind of
like bother
out again or yeah. And it was just such a crazy situation because I'm obviously trying to win a golf tournament, and I felt this calmness, but you know, I went straight to my physio. We got it taped, and I didn't even see Denny hit in the water, but I heard everyone kind of start screaming. And then
you didn't even know he hit it in the water. Like you didn't see it.
I just, you know, I heard the crowd and I was like, okay, well,
It could have been in the back bunker for all you knew.
Yeah.
And when you got to your golf ball, you figured that he was in the water, but you weren't positive.
No, I was positive when I got back to the golf ball, but when I was getting taped, you know, we were behind the scoreboard and I just heard everyone go, oh, and I was like, all right, he either hit in the water or hit in the back bunker. And I get back and, you know, obviously hit a great wedge shot. And then I'm like counting on my fingers, like 1, 2, 3, drop 4, hit 5. I was like, oh my God, I just won the golf tournament. And it was just crazy because, you know, he just played so freaking good all day and just kind of, you know, the one mistake. And I listened back to his interview and he said he had a bug on his ball. And I think that goes back to the importance I think it goes back to the importance of like the mental game, because, you know, if he backs off and doesn't care if he's embarrassed or whatever, like it could have changed the outcome for sure. And I think that's what I've learned. You know, just backing off is important and doesn't matter if you look dumb or you're not comfortable, like just do it. And, it was just so unexpected because he played so good. And I have so much respect for him, and just watching one of the best putters in the world do his thing is pretty sweet. So,
Well, I can say this now. This explains way more to me because I'm in the booth and all I see is you decide like, hey, I'm going to go get taped up. And we just saw a ball get hit in the water. I'm thinking to myself, oh, crap, he's about to ice himself right here. So I was thinking like, there was like, man, actually get out there, just hit your 80-yard shot so you don't have to think about it for 2 minutes. But that's okay, this is making a little bit more sense. But you got up there, it was like you just got up to the ball anyways and you striped it. So it was sick.
Yeah.
Oh, man. That was going to be, you know, the event of the year as far as the drama goes. And I know as soon as you finish up, you probably realize it's like, oh, crap, I'm going to the Masters. I know you had played there before. Correct me if I'm wrong, right? You had played Augusta National before, but how difficult was it when you got there? Because I think you and I talked outside the clubhouse and you said you were working with a little cold, but still it had to be mentally draining showing up to your first Masters coming off a win. I imagine your emotions were just like trying to get as much energy as you could to play your first Masters.
Yeah, it was just crazy 24 hours. Cause obviously, you know, you don't leave the golf course in tech. I didn't leave the golf course till 9:30. And thankfully, you know, the tournament had a plane for us and one of my sponsors he brought his plane and picked us up and
perfect.
but you know, just being on that plane, it was 2.5 hours. You land, your car's there. And, but we didn't get to the house till 1:30. I think everyone was still on cloud nine for a little bit, didn't fall asleep till 4. And then, you know, I feel like for your first Masters, you want to prepare as well as you can, understand the golf course. But, you know, I was just so tired. Like Monday, I just kind of got the lay of the land. And I don't think many people understand how big the property is. You know, the clubhouse is, or I guess the locker room is in one spot. And then you have the range in one spot. And then you have, you know, media in another spot, and then the gym and, you know, across the parking lot. Like it is just so big and you feel like you get so lost. And I think, you know, we obviously have the privilege to have our phones, but everyone on your team doesn't. And so trying to plan everything like a normal week was just so unorganized. And on top of that, it was probably the hardest, you know, the Masters has played in, I don't know, 5-6 years, probably since when Danny Willett won. So just trying to prepare for it, but yet, you know, still I didn't even really expect to be there. So it's just a whole lot of emotions that came into it.
Man, I imagine. And I know it was a really difficult week, and I hate that you had to bring up 2016 as somebody who was who lost to Danny Willett down the stretch. I wouldn't call it down the stretch, maybe just a little early in the day. I kind of let it loose, but we're not going to get into that. But I wanted to just ask you, I know you kind of just talked a little bit about your experience, but what about the golf course did you like about Augusta National? Do you feel like that's a place one day that you can win at after playing your first Masters?
Yeah, Augusta's Augusta. It's got there's just never give up on that golf course. Even the par fives now, there's still, not many easy shots. You can leave yourself in some really tough spots. And I think the golf course, the more experience you have and the more experience your caddy is and understanding so many things about it, it just plays a big part of it. And I think what's really impressive was when Ludvig obviously finishing second in his first Masters, or Jordan being in contention in his first Masters, even you being in contention, is it's just unbelievable because, like golf course changes so fast. And the wind was I'm a really good ball striker. I play really good in the wind. Valero, it blew 20-30, but it's so consistent. And there is just literally a guessing game. And for the cut to be 6 or 7 over, it just shows we're the best players in the world, yet 6 over is a cut. And it's just crazy. The greens got so firm so fast, and there's just certain things about it that you're like, how is this even possible? Like 3 green, the whole green pitches hard right to left and downhill.
Yeah.
And they had that back left pin, and that putt is downhill left to right, but your chipping is downhill right. Like, it's just crazy how the green slopes like that. And I think just understanding, the more and more you play, like, we're to truly miss it and actually hit shots. And 12, I could never figure out. That sucks. You watch it on TV, you're like, dude, this is a freaking, it's a 9-iron, it's a pitching wedge, and then all of a sudden it's like, I didn't hit the green once, though.
It is a nightmare when you just, like, it's not moving up at the green, but you see all around you that it's howling. That hole's an absolute mess trying to figure out what type of shot, because if you play it up in the air and it happens to get hit, it's just, that's not what you want to do. So pretty cool stuff, man. And I think this kind of leads us into our next bit of this conversation, which is, about 14 months ago, if my math serves me correct, you were kind of playing off of still exemptions and really, you eventually played your way into special temporary status, which if you listen to Charlie and I on this podcast, I think special temporary status is like a made up word and doesn't even do anything, because you learned the hard way in that by getting special temporary status and winning. And it's like, oh wait, I had special temporary status and I still didn't get all those points of when I had special temporary status. So just kind of talk about like how difficult and how, if finally you get to plan out your schedule. In the past, it's like your schedule was all over the place, and your team, like you said, you finally got that organized. Do you feel like finally you're in a place where your game has matured, like you've matured, and that you can finally kind of move in the direction which you can set these lofty goals?
Yeah, I think I feel like my game is, still very similar to how it was last year. I think obviously the putter change has been a big a big change, but a great change. And my ball striking was really, really good last year, and it's starting to kind of trend like that again. I think I've gained plus 4 or 5 shots almost the last 3 or 4 weeks, even the last 5 weeks. And I've always driven it better and better. But I think last year was such a weird year. I was planning to play Korn Ferry. I played 4 events, had a couple good finishes, and all of a sudden, I'm playing all these tour events, and a top 10 in a couple really big events, like this week at the Wells Fargo. I think truly being a professional golfer and, like I said, the CEO of my company is important, and I'm learning so much about it. especially at my age, I've been doing it for 5 years now. and, you know, for just to keep learning and still be one of the younger guys is really cool because, you know, it's not easy out here. And I'm still learning a lot and trying to figure out the balance. And I always love playing golf. And these last 2 weeks I took off and I'm not used to that, but, you know, it just comes with the territory.
Yeah, it makes a ton of sense. And you said it 5 years ago, you make the decision coming out of high school to turn professional. So you're 17 years old. And I asked you in happy hour, maybe it was even before, like you didn't really consider going to college. And I want to ask you this a little bit about this. I know you were obviously one of the most talented juniors coming out, but there wasn't like an NIL component to college like it is now. Would that have changed at all for you? Were you always going to be turning pro?
Yeah, I don't think anything would have changed. And I think the PGA Tour U thing is great. Obviously, you can get a tour card now and Korn Ferry starts and everything. But I don't know. I still want to see myself waiting 4 years or 3 years to get my mm-hmm. tour card. And I think the way I've done it and my story and kind of everything I've learned so fast is, you know, it's time that I don't think I would ever gotten in college because the people I've gotten to meet. And like I said, just being a professional golfer there's so much more to it than just, you know, playing golf and playing on the PGA Tour and making money. There's just so much more to it. And the travel and, you know, the consistency is something that I've learned over time, but at my pace and with the people I have around me. And it's, yeah, I just wouldn't ever change, honestly. I would have turned pro. I didn't love school, but.
Yeah, me and you both, my man. Me and you both. And I think in probably 2000, oh, shoot, maybe this was like 19 or something like that, or 20, I was playing in the RSM. And maybe you had gotten a sponsor's invite, or maybe you were trying to do the Monday qualifier. And I was talking to you and your family at the porch and at Sea Island, and they had this event. And I talked to your dad for quite some time just about the journey that you were on. I think you were playing mini tour stuff, just trying to find your way. And in that first year, did you ever doubt the decision of turning pro, like immediately? Did you think, like, were you overwhelmed at all at the very beginning where you're thinking, like, man, like, did I make the right decision?
No, I never doubted it. I think over time, you know, you feel like it's a cliche of you spend too much time out there. You know, as a kid, especially at 17 years old, you want to, you know, spend as much time on the practice green and test all the new clubs and, you know, just kind of, this is what you dreamed about, playing on the PGA Tour, yeah. Playing PGA Tour events. And I think at the time I just wasn't ready. But I still almost made some cuts, and I miss every cut as a, you know, my first year, but I still was always kind of right there at mm-hmm. right on the cut line. And I just didn't know how to deal with it. And, I think COVID, you know, was a tough thing for a lot of people, but a blessing for me because I kind of got to relax a little bit and kind of truly just work hard on my game and what I needed to do to, I guess, not necessarily compete out there, but just be, you know, a little more consistent. Everything kind of just progressed every year. You know, won my first mini tour event, then.
Yeah, where was it? What mini tour event was it? Was it Swing Thought? Does that sound
Swing
right?
Swing Thought.
Yeah, there you go.
Swing Thought Tour.
Do you remember how much you got paid?
$10,000.
My man. I love it.
It was sweet. I remember I had my friend caddying at the time, and my other friend, he came down, kind of come watch. And I remember after the round, we went to Moe's, and I just told him, look, guys, like, this one's on me today.
That's what I'm talking about, man. I want to, like, right when I turned pro, I won a Hopkins Tour event. I don't even know if you knew what that tour was or if it was around when you were, because it wasn't much. It wasn't around much longer after I won that event because I won $15,000 and I never got paid. So that's kind of where I was like, I need to get off the mini tours. I hate it here. And so, and it's funny, Pat Kizire and I were battling down the stretch, and I won, and he finished second. So we both made it through Q school. We're like, all right, I guess we need to make it to the tour, because I don't think we're ever going to see that money again.
That's unbelievable. Yeah. You know, we just bankrupt the mini tours, you know, but, yeah, I just, you know, back to winning my first mini tour to top 10 in my first PGA Tour event and my first made cut, then Monday qualifying into my first PGA Tour event, just kind of everything started happening, and I always knew I had it. It was just kind of a matter of time and understanding, and, yeah, here we are now.
Yeah, and I guess, like, to just put a period on this conversation, you know, I think the game of golf, when we look at all the great juniors and the great players in our game, like Tiger Woods, you know, look at Justin Thomas, Jordan Spieth, spending some time in college. You know, they weren't there all 4 years, but they did spend time. But then you look at different sports leagues, like, you know, I would say the NBA, you know, you can fast track, and the MLB, you can turn pro right away and get your clock started. So golf is just unusual in the fact that you can be talented enough to get going early, but you're one of the few guys to really do it. So I just think it's a credit to your confidence and your ability to say, you know what, let's just go figure out how to play pro golf, because that's what I want to do for a living.
Yeah, I think, you know, so many people have talent. And I was so fortunate to get, you know, 7 spots as a 17-year-old on the PGA Tour, 7 sponsors exemptions. And I think having the ability to play those events and just kind of to experience that, I feel like it's just not something that a lot of people get, and obviously very appreciative of it now. And it's cool now to go back as a 2-time PGA Tour winner to these events that always gave me spots, and just kind of crazy, you know, come back and be like, I mean, what was I doing 2 years ago playing this tournament? I was freaking out.
I love it. And Akshay, I mean, we know you from how good you are at golf, but I found you via social media, and I want to talk just a little bit about content, because that's something that's important to you. And I mean, I was sitting here last night, I type in Akshay on YouTube, and you just dropped this TPC Sawgrass video that already had, it dropped 26 minutes in and had like 50 comments. So obviously that's something that's a point of emphasis of yours, to kind of grow on the YouTube side as well as other aspects of your social media. Kind of just talk about what your long-term plan is for kind of your content.
Yeah, I guess I've always loved it. My cousin Anish does, you know, a lot of my social media stuff. He's one of the most creative people I know. And, you know, it's something we've always wanted to do, especially on the YouTube side, but just never quite had the time or the understanding of what we truly needed to do. And, but now it's just so fun, because I feel like a lot of kids or a lot of people don't get to see the perspective of a PGA Tour player's life. I think what Netflix did was awesome. I think, you know, with Good on YouTube or the Brian Bros or whoever, they show, you know, just kind of the fun parts of golf, playing challenges with your friends or whatever it may be. But for me, I want to show a different perspective of, this is how we travel, this is my practice, or, you know, sometimes we'll do matches, but more so it's just kind of the experience of a tournament. And I think for me, it's just a lot of fun. I love watching YouTube. First of all, I love podcasts, obviously. And, I just think, you know, as a kid, being able to see, you know, PGA Tour pro's life is cool. And, you know, just inspiring people and getting the game to grow. I feel like social media is such a big part now of everyone's lives, and, especially for golf to grow and for kids to be interacted with, you know, random stuff of golf. And I think that's what, you know, a lot of these creators do so well, of making it seem so fun. Like, oh, I want to go, you know, play one club. Like, that sounds awesome, you know? And, you know, with the Instagram stuff, it's really cool. But I think obviously growing my brand and being a little different than a lot of people, it's important to me because I just want to be myself, but at the same time, I guess not stand out, but kind of make an effort a little bit more than some guys, because some guys obviously want a lot of privacy in their life, which is absolutely okay. And for me, I love interacting with people, and I love, you know, just making kids smile or whatever it may be, because it's important for us to show that we care about, you know, people supporting us. And yeah, I just really enjoy it.
Yeah, it's a great way to grow your brand as well, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, Akshay, let's kind of enter to what has been a really fun part of this podcast and show. And if you're listening, this is a good time to flip on over to YouTube so you can kind of follow along with the videos that we have that Akshay's team has sent to us. And we're going to start with the putting. And before we get the video pulled up, last year, Akshay, using the arm lock putter, this year, the Broomstick putter, you've already mentioned it, how good your stats have been and how well you're rolling it. But the change, Stephen Sweeney, your putting coach, how did y'all end up making the decision to go from the arm lock to the Broomstick putter?
Yeah, I think, you know, I never had good putting weeks. I remember Mexico, the Vedante Mexico Open. That was the first week I did aim point. I played with Harry Hall the week before in the Zurich, and he was kind of telling me about it. And first week I did it, I gained like 4 strokes, and I was like, all right, well, this is it. And then just from there, I never had good putting weeks, and I hit it so good, but yet I was losing strokes almost every week. And even at Barracuda, you know, I never putted great. I just kind of hung around, and that format's a little different. But, you know, I had, unfortunately, obviously didn't get into the playoffs when I won, didn't get my points. And I went down to see Steven, and I told him, you know, I want to try this Broomstick. Obviously, Lucas Glover won the week of Wyndham using it, switched. And obviously, the guy's been through a lot of different feelings. And I've had some feelings on the greens, and, I've tried, you know, regular putter, and I've putted great with a regular putter, but sometimes, you know, mentally I just couldn't do it. And arm lock was just difficult because I can never get my speed right. You know, obviously once it's locked into your arm, then you can only do so much manipulation with your wrist to, you know, hit a 50, 60 footer or up a slope or whatever it may be. And I remember trying the Broomstick, and, you know, Sweeney really liked it, but I was just not really convinced. And I practiced with it for a little bit. And I remember going into Napa at the Fortinet, and, you know, first round, I'm like, I think it was Tuesday, Wednesday, I was going back and forth of arm lock, Broomstick. And then, you know, I'm like, all right, I'm just going to try this Broomstick. And I putted terrible. The first round, I putted so bad. And then the second round, you know, I switched back to arm lock, and I putted great, and I played with Justin that week, and he's like, man, that Broomstick sucks pretty much. And then, you know, I played that fall season. I putted a little bit better, but still not good enough to obviously win that fall. And I played RSM, and the first round, I think we had a rain delay, so we came back Friday, finished the round, and I was using arm lock. And the second day, I was like, told my guy, I was like, just go get the Broomstick. If I miss this cut, whatever, I just want to see how this is. And, you know, I started to feel a little more comfortable, and I still, you know, I didn't roll it great, and I made some nice putts. I made a lot more longer putts. And then this, you know, December, we kind of had a call, and everyone was kind of like, we need to do this. And I think it's really going to make a big change. And wow, this stroke's going to look terrible.
All right.
I remember how bad it felt.
Oh, I can't imagine. Cause like, you don't really know like what to move. Right. So when, with the arm lock, you're, you know, it, like you said, it's glued against you, and you do have to use more shoulders, but like your arm being like almost parallel to the ground has to be like a very odd feeling for the first time. Joey, can you pull up a face on so we can kind of see what that looks like from that angle? Because I think this is where the really awkward moment is the first time you get with that putter, because you just don't – like what was the first feel that you came up with? It's like, okay, this is kind of what I'm trying to do here.
I mean, obviously the biggest thing with the broomstick is setup, getting your arm where you want it to be, ball position, how far you are from the ball. Like, all that makes so much of a difference. It's not like, you know, a regular putter where, you know, your ball position can be a little off, but you can still roll the ball good. This is like, you have to be almost perfect to set up. And then once you get the setup, then you got to figure out, okay, what's going to start the putter back. And there's, you know, different grip variations and so many different things that you can do. And, it just was, it's such a weird change. And I think that's kind of what Lucas Glover was saying. It's so foreign that it's almost a great thing because you're just trying to relearn.
That's a good
system.
That's the good part, right? Like, if anybody's listening at home that's struggling with their putting, they're like, oh, gosh, I can't figure this thing out. I think the broomstick is such a unique experience. It's almost like relearning how to putt for the first time.
Yeah. And I think the biggest thing that convinced me towards the broomstick was I played with Lucas Glover in Mexico and he putted unreal. I play with Adam Scott in Bermuda. He putts unreal. And then Siwoo Kim was using a broomstick and he putted unreal. And I was like, all right, like this is, and to me, like, you know, a lot of people think it should be banned and a lot of people think I anchor it, whatever. But to me, I think it looks really cool. I think it's like when you see Lucas Glover, Adam Scott or Siwoo, like when I saw them set up to it, I was like, dude, this guy just looks like a solid, like
He's going to make some putts. I love
and
that.
So, you know, making that change in December, I still wasn't fully convinced, but they finally sent me like the Jailbird, which obviously Ricky and Wyndham and Keegan, like everyone was using. And kind of once I got that putter in my hands, I was like, this is it. Like, this is the one that I feel like it's going to be great. And I also remember you were watching us at Sanderson Farms and I had a putt on the 11th hole and you're like, you know, I think he should make this broomstick change. And Wags was like, yeah, but you know, he rolls it so good. And I just, you know, I've rewatched that round and I remember you saying that, but yeah, it was obviously a big change, but also it's a cool experience because you get to kind of really dial in everything. And like I said, relearn, you know, this putting style, and going into, you know, Century, it was my first week doing it and I putted great. And kind of from then I've pretty much had, you know, a lot of really solid weeks on the greens. And, you know, I've had one or two bad rounds or two bad weeks, but it's just, I don't know. I feel a lot more comfortable, and I also understand like my tendencies now.
Yeah, I mean, so your stats are so good. We're looking at Wells Fargo putting from this week as we're kind of rolling these through. Your stats speak for itself. Putting inside of 10 feet this year, 90%. You're 17th putting. I mean, your stats are just so good with the putting, with how good you hit it. I mean, you're going to find yourself in contention so often now.
Yeah, I did a podcast with Dan Rapp from Fortin. He was asking me, you know, what's the biggest thing for you to kind of get to the next level or to win golf tournament? I said putting. And, you know, fortunately I've always worked really hard, especially on putting, and always looked up to Jason Day because he works so hard. He has one of the best strokes I think ever in the world. And he obviously went through that period of time where he didn't miss, but I've always worked really hard, but now I feel like I have my checklist every day. And, you know, I feel like if I get that done and I'm really consistent, like I'm just never going to have many bad putting weeks. And I feel like that's kind of what the broom can produce. You know, you're never going to have really bad putting weeks. You might not have great days, but you'll still have days where the hole looks like a bucket. So, I think for all the viewers that struggle putting and, you know, wonder why they miss 2-3 footers, just freaking go grab a broomstick and, you know, go have fun.
Well, the putting's been fun to watch, but I think one of the big reasons why you wanted Valero was how well you pitched it. And I watched you and your coach work on the pitching on Wednesday, and we have some videos that he sent over. And this is Coach Gabe it's Gabe Golf on Instagram. Gabriel Yedstedt, is that how you pronounce his last name? Is that it? Yeah. I mean, it's so funny. Little quick story on his last name. I was so nervous about saying it on the air at Valero, but I had all this great information that I'd learned from him that y'all were working on at Valero. And I'm like, hey, Dan, tee me up, because he knew how to say Gabe's name. I was like, please, just say, like, I like whacked him on the arm. I was like, it's time. He's like, so Akshay has been working very hard with this short game coach, Gabriel Yedshed. And I was like, thank you. I thought I was going to fumble it so bad. But here's a video he sent. And I think a lot of people, when they see this face on, it's not a perfect angle, but they can see how quick your arms are. You're working on trying to get some friction at the bottom, but you move towards the target. Just kind of talk about that. Seems to be something a little bit new you're doing this year with him.
Yeah, I think, you know, I did a kind of like a trial week at Honda, and he looked at my pitching, and first thing we did was we went from, you know, I interlock grip, so we went overlap, which is a big change, but it obviously softens the blow, and then, you know, matching the backswing speed with the through swing. Yeah, and all of a sudden, you know, I'd never spun the golf ball a lot. I play a low spin ball, but now I'm starting to spin it a lot, and I feel like I can hit a lot of those spinners. And I just feel like now he's helped me understand, you know, my baseline, but then you have the versatility of different shots, different lies, you know, just random things. And I feel like he's really good at kind of just telling you how to do it. And I feel like he unlocked the potential I always had. And so now I understand, like, okay, well, if the ball's sitting up, you know, in the rough, then I hit up on the ball. And if it's, you know, sitting in a divot, and then I like tow it down and hood the crap out of it, or in the, you know, there's just so many different shots. Like if you have a short shot in the rough and you have, you know, 3-4 paces, and I like, I'll hit the golf ball and like draw my hands back, and it'll come out like really soft, but there's so much speed that it's not like a muff shot.
Yeah, it comes out
like normal. So there's just so many different things that I've learned, and it's a lot of fun.
I think this is a really cool shot that we have here on the screen now. It's like, this is, the face is wide open, but you're taking a really slow backswing and getting a ton of speed at the ball. Is this kind of that low spinner shot right here that you're kind of working on?
So this one is, we call it a flow. So it's like longer, slower, but then this one we call like the low flow, because I move forward still. And so it'll come out with, you know, soft, but a lot of spin. And then if I'm short-sided or it's firm greens, then I'll go with the flow, which is like really long, really slow, but the ball will come out super soft. Sometimes it'll come out spinny. And like at Augusta, I chipped it. Like, if you ever get Shane Lowry on the podcast and you ask him about my short game at Augusta, like it was nasty, dude. Like,
didn't you hit a flop shot on like behind the green on one? Didn't you like hit like a full flop?
Oh my gosh. it was like a sandy, it was where all the chairs were. So it was into the grain, sandy, matted down. And obviously, like, you know, that green is wicked. But I hit this like, this bunker shot, like fat flop that lands like on this small little shelf and trickles to like a foot. And then 15, the first day I hit it long in the green near those like three pine trees, and it is downwind or like down off the right. And I hit this flop that landed like a inch on the green and went to like 6 feet. And Shane comes up to me and goes, dude, I wish I was 22. And I was like, yeah, it's just like my short game that week was nasty. And even, you know, Phil and I are good friends, and he even saw some of those flop shots I hit, and he was like, dude, that was nice.
you're getting some compliments from the original short game chef. That's not Parker McLaughlin. This is Phil Mickelson. The guy's just nasty. But the last two videos we have, they're actually, you hole out both of these. So these are kind of just cool videos just to roll in as we kind of head out of this section. This is at the back of the range at TVC Sawgrass, it looks like.
Yep.
You remember this shot?
Oh, yeah. This is when we were first working on kind of like, I was like, you know, I need a better 50 yard like soft shot. And he's like, oh, just do this. And then I hold it.
Well, what do you do?
It's just, I, you know, I've always been a clock person. So I kind of, it's more of like kind of a long, slower shot, but it doesn't come out really fast. And so I feel like I have a lot of time to kind of hit the 50 yard shot. So I take it to, I would say 2:30, 3 o'clock, and then just kind of let the, you know, stay in front of it, move forward. And then all of a sudden it just comes out soft and slow. You know, if I have a shot that's downwind or a front pin, whatever it may be. And, so yeah, it was,
that's
kind of the first of those.
That's sick. And the next one we have is like a super grainy lie. I'm not sure exactly what short game facility this next video is in, but it looks like you're going to be going with like the toe down shot. Can you tell where this is? Is this Honda?
Yeah.
Or this Cognizant? Is Honda. Sorry. Cogs.
Yeah. So this was like the first day we worked together, and sandy, grainy. And you know, we went toe down, open face, and then still kind of very, very cutty. So
could you hit that shot before? Did you like learning just the ingredients there? Was that like a hallelujah for like for learning how to hit that shot?
I felt like I could just never, I know how to hit that shot, but I feel like I just never had, yeah, I guess the ingredients to actually do that on command. You know, some would come out great, and then some would come out, you know,
short or like kind of hot. Yeah.
So now I'm like, oh, I know exactly what I'm doing.
Well, this was all really useful information for those that are grinding on their short games. They come out of the spring and they have all these big expectations about this is the year I'm going to finally lower my handicap or win the whatever championship at their home golf course. And now they got all these useful information and tools from Akshay. So thank you for sharing all this. And just the last thing I want to kind of talk about is first off, Wells Fargo being one of them. Do you consider this being kind of a home event for you? Is this kind of one you have circled on your schedule every year as one you want to win?
Oh, absolutely. This is by far my favorite golf course that we play all year. And it is very a home game for me. I mean, being in North Carolina, and I don't know, this whole tournament's awesome. I've been fortunate to play it a couple times, and thankfully now I can, you know, being a signature event, thankfully I'm in it. Because this was one I really wanted to play, and I didn't ever get an opportunity earlier in the year to play any of these signature events, but you know, everyone with the tournament staff was gracious enough to give me the opportunity to kind of like chat with them, and I made their job easy by winning and getting in. But Quail is a special place. Golf course is freaking just so pure. I mean,
it's so good.
Augusta's, you know, Augusta's got its own presence, but this place, I think this place and Memorial and Augusta kind of stand alone as just a different, just different atmosphere.
It's a vibe right when you pull in, it's just a vibe. It's just, it's a big, yeah, big time event, clubhouse, locker room, just the amenities. It's just like, yep, this is big time golf. This is what I dreamed of, right?
The snacks and the milkshakes here and the food, like, is just top.
They still have those donuts like in the locker room.
Yep.
Oh my gosh.
Freshly made.
We tell the donut guy, I said hello and I miss him. And I wish at times that I was still playing on tour for things like that. But, I probably wouldn't be having conversations with Akshay. So this has been a lot of fun. And I think, next week being the PGA Championship, I was just kind of, you know, just doing a little Googling on Akshay, and I totally forgot. And I knew this had happened, that you won the junior PGA at Valhalla in 2018.
Yep.
How sick is that? So you've already played and won there. Charlie, our co-host and producer of this podcast, he picked you, by the way, at Valero. And I actually called one of my buddies Wednesday night, and they're like, hey, who should I pick for my one and done? And I was like, dude, I don't even know why they're playing the event at Valero. Akshay's going to win. And I had – I can't even remember who I picked for our one and done, but I knew I had such good feelings about you that week. But Charlie can't pick you anymore, so I just might have to burn my Akshay card at the PGA Championship. I mean, the guy's already won there.
Yeah, I think, like I said, everything about my story is definitely crazy to me. I mean, being my first PGA Championship, going back to Valhalla where I won, is really cool. I just don't think you can, you know, write that. And I'm pumped to get back. You know, that chip on 18 was one of the clutchest moments I think I've ever had in my life.
I was sitting here looking at this chip. I saw it on Twitter today. Man, it's going to be fun to watch you not only this week at the Wells Fargo, but at the PGA Championship for your first PGA Championship at Valhalla. So there's a lot to be excited about if you're Akshay Bhatia, but if you're an Akshay fan as well, a lot to look forward to, because you got a lot of great golf in front of you. And I'm looking forward to watching you play a bunch, because I don't have to look far for your golf balls. You're always right in the middle of the fairway. So this is, it's an easy job for me.
Yeah, I try to make it easy as possible for you. So,
all right, man. Well, I appreciate you doing this. And the Smiley Show would definitely love to do any type of YouTube content down the road, or collaboration, if you will. So definitely look forward to potentially doing some stuff with you down the road. And as always, you're more than welcome to join us on this podcast. This has been a whole lot of fun, and play really well this week, dude.
Thanks. I'm pumped. I feel like we've been talking about being on this podcast for 6 months, and you're like, you know, we just got to wait until something good happens. And thankfully it did. So
I knew that your story wasn't done being told. And I was like, this, something is going to happen. I don't know what's going to happen. And it was just an instinct. I was like, why am I going to get Akshay on if I know like something's going to happen? And Valero happens. And of course I'm on the call in the booth, and I talk to you on a Wednesday for 45 minutes before the round. It's just stuff like that. It just makes sense. So this has been a lot of fun, and we're not going to go another 6 months without doing something else. So we'll make sure of that.
Yeah. Well, thanks for having me, and hopefully, some YouTube content soon.
My guy, play well this week, and see you soon. Right.
Thanks, dude.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.